The tax overhaul bill hits a roadblock in the Senate. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The Senate is scheduled to continue debating its tax bill today. Central to that debate is a new congressional report on the nitty-gritty accounting for the tax overhaul. The nonpartisan analysis, taken very seriously by the right and the left, says the plan would not pay for itself, as has been promised. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins me now live from our Washington Bureau. Nancy, what did this Joint Committee on Taxation analysis find?
Well, David, it says the Senate tax plan would add $1 trillion to the deficit over the next 10 years. Now, Republicans have been saying the tax cuts in the bill would generate so much economic growth they'd pay for themselves. But the committee says the cuts would only generate $458 billion, leaving us, now here's the important part, David, $1 trillion in the hole. Stan Collender, who teaches public policy at Georgetown, says this is a big deal.
This is not a situation where it's a one-time $1 trillion increase. I mean, this is a $1 trillion increase over 10 years that would be repeated again and again and again, and will add significantly to the national debt.
So what are they going to do to get rid of a $1 trillion abyss of red ink?
Well, the Senate plan cuts the corporate tax rate down to 20%, so you could delay that cut, or you could start at 20%. But raise it back up over time. Or you could reinstate the alternative minimum tax on some individuals and corporations. And that tax is, of course, meant to ensure that wealthy individuals and corporations pay something in taxes, but the tax overhaul eliminates it.
Or you could just ignore all of that. But what's next?
Well, originally the thinking was that the Senate would vote on its tax bill today, go to a conference committee Monday to work out differences with the House. This may not be a showstopper, but it's a lot more than a snag in the process. It's certainly more than a snag. Senate Republican leaders are working with senators like Bob Corker, who are concerned about the tax plan's effect on the deficit, trying to work out a compromise that would win those votes.
Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thank you. Let's do the numbers. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down minus 70 points for the Dow future, minus 0.7% for the NASDAQ future. FTSE in London down 0.4%. You count on Marketplace to keep you informed about the economy and then some. It's what we talk about and how we talk about it in what we hope is an approachable, objective, and sometimes unexpected way. As a nonprofit news organization, we have a mission that drives what we do every day, to increase economic intelligence across the country. I think it's important work that we're already doing, but with your help, we'll be able to do more of it. For as little as $5 a month, consider signing up as a Marketplace investor. It's a way to directly support independent reporting and journalism you can trust, and the payoff comes in knowing that you're helping educate and inform people about the economic forces that affect our lives. Donate today at marketplace.org, and thank you. A Nobel Prize-winning left-leaning economist and Republican President Donald Trump actually agree on something? Globalization, freer trade with less friction at borders, really stuck it to lower-income people. But on remedies for this broken globalization, there is no agreement at all. Joseph Stiglitz is the Nobel Prize-winning economist and a professor at Columbia University. He was chair of President Clinton's Council of Economic Advisors. He's just updated his bestseller from 2002 called Globalization and Its Discontents. The new version has the subtitle Anti-Globalization in the Era of Trump. Professor Stiglitz came into our New York Bureau here.
One of the ironies is my original book, I said the system was unfair to the developing world, and now Trump comes along and says it's unfair to the United States. What a puzzle. And the answer is it was an agenda that was driven by large corporations at the expense of workers, consumers, citizens, in both the developed and developing world.
Well, that's the key, right? It's not that the U.S. workers who feel they were suffering under the globalization system are wrong.
That's right. They have suffered, as have many in the developing world, say in Africa. The winners are large corporations. And so the major thesis of the book is that we can create a globalization that works for all, but we'll have to change the rules. It can't be a corporate-led globalization.
I was struck rereading the book about how, among the many things that you seem to have nailed back then in 2002, is this issue of multinationals and just how they're taxed. This, of course, is a front and center public policy issue right now with companies doing fancy footwork, so they end up paying taxes kind of nowhere. But you were onto that, weren't you?
And Apple has become the modern poster child of using globalization for tax avoidance. It isn't inevitable that we have a globalization which is used by the corporations not to pay taxes. It is not inevitable that we have a form of globalization in which corporations use the threat of moving jobs abroad to lower wages. None of this is inevitable. We could have managed globalization in ways that ordinary citizens would have benefited rather than just the corporations. Trade is beneficial. There are gains to be had from taking advantage of comparative advantage and specialization. That's true if you manage globalization right, but if you manage it wrong, the overall gains will be very small or even negative. But even worse, those gains will go to a very few people at the top, and a majority of citizens can actually be worse off.
The new version of the book is called Globalization and Its Discontents Revisited, Anti-Globalization in the Era of Trump. The author is Columbia professor and Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz. Professor, thank you.
Thank you.
In the director's cut of that interview at marketplace.org, we talk more about how the Trump administration's America First push away from global institutions means other world powers, such as China, will increasingly be calling the shots on how globalization evolves. And a lot of attention today to White House sources telling some of the big newspapers that Rex Tillerson could soon be out as Secretary of State. The State Department says the White House chief of staff called to say that is not true. We note that sources tell the news agency Reuters that President Trump's chief economic advisor might also be leaving in the new year. Gary Cohn got into it with his boss and nearly resigned after Trump blamed both sides for the Charlottesville unrest this summer. Cohn had said the Trump administration can and must do better to condemn hate groups and heal divisions. Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Janet Wynn. Our engineer this week is Brian Allison. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.